This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan. It looks like it's shaping up to be a pretty hectic couple of weeks at the Yang di-Pertuan Agong's palace. His Majesty wrapped up his first day of meetings with the head honchos from the opposition bench yesterday, with more meetings scheduled for today. And on top of that, the YDPA is also set to convene a special rulers' conference next week. But what exactly is going on? And should we expect any significant changes in the coming months? So joining me on the show today to help me make sense of it all is Dr. Bridget Welch, political commentator and an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. Welcome to the show, Bridget. Good to have you on as always.
Always great to be here and nice to see you.
All right, let's start at the beginning, Bridget. Perhaps you can give us an overview of why politicians have been summoned to the palace in the first place.
I think there are a number of things that are going on, right? We see at one level that the government's performance has been failing, right? And there have been considerable rising up of forces within society about what's happening. And there has been a need for the royalty to be seen as addressing these issues. And as king, he plays that important role in terms of looking at the assessments of the country. But you have to recognize that this crisis is in many ways a crisis, the first time that the country is facing a crisis that it hasn't been able to buy itself out of. And in that context, we're seeing a lot more pressures that are coming from multiple different sets of sources. In order to be seen to do something, and I think very important in understanding Malaysian politics is the performance dimension of this, that you're having these meetings and as a way to respond to the fact that the ground is arguably among the worst it's ever been in Malaysia history.
Now, Bridget, there have been many visits to the palace over the past year or so, and sometimes these visits result in seismic shifts in our political landscape. You know, we talk about the formation of the Perikatan National Government after Langkah Sheraton, and also this year, the declaration of Darurat. But other visits have accomplished little, you know, outside of making the headlines for a day. For example, Anwar's I Have the Numbers and so on and so forth. What about these ongoing visits to the palace by party leaders? You touched on the performance aspect of it, but is it actually important?
I think it's very important. So, I mean, we've got government performance issues, we've got elite disgruntlement issues that are happening among sultans expressing statements about the government and calling, and this leads to the issues of what I think is going to be very important next week, which is the Council of Ruler meeting. We also have a sense that the royalty itself is being questioned in the public in a way that is different than before, as well as a royalty that is also vested in trying to make the situation better, right? So therefore, these consultations are taking place. Now, in this regard, I think that, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what are the different sort of things that could happen, right, in this area? And you know, what sort of outcomes could come from this?
Right.
And for me, I sort of see that there is a kind of different aspects to what's happening. One is that it could just be all distraction.
Okay.
And we have to recognize that this is just a kind of a process, a performance in that area. But there also could be outcomes, all right?
Okay.
Real substantive outcomes that change the kind of power configuration at the elite level in the country. And the way I conceptualize this is that on a continuum of kind of least change to more change. And in that context, you know, we can interpret those as being more contributing to more stability or to more democratic governance. So let me just describe to you what I see are the things on the continuum that are useful.
Right.
So let's start at the kind of the low end, right? So the low end could mean there could be a cabinet reshuffle that the king encourages, right?
Okay.
And there could be in some form in this area kind of a rebuke that says you need to do better and here are the areas that you need to do better. And then there is a response of that. Huh? With, of course, the fact that the government stays in power and the emergency is extended in that regard. And this would be a change. We've seen sort of similar kind of rebukes before, but it would be perhaps more a kind of intensified rebuke, right? A second sort of thing is a little bit more, which could be accompanied with a rebuke, and that is what I call a pressure reducer. This is a sort of decision to kind of end the emergency, open up parliament, or to create a hybrid parliament, but keeping an emergency, but with a parliament being allowed in some form, in that regard. And so in that form would probably mean just having discussions of issues as opposed to votes. And of course, this would probably involve some sort of timeline in this regard, of which that timeline, of course, in Malaysia changes. You know, is when vaccines are delivered, they change, right? The third sort of kind of dynamic is kind of where there's a deal-making process happens, right? And so people present, they have the different numbers, or claim to different numbers. And those deals can take different dimensions. They can be about changing government and offering alternatives, or they can be about, confidence and supply agreements to say we're going to work together in different ways, right? And so this deal making means that there is a configuration that is different than a Muhyiddin government, or there is a Muhyiddin government in the context of the sets of deals, or different players within that. Keep in mind that, the Muhyiddin government is a configuration of multiple sets of parties, right? And there is a lot of disgruntlement among those members. We talk often about UMNO, but I think we can also recognize that DPS and Sarawak is very unhappy of what things are happening. The only party that really seems very happy being in PN is PAS. And this deal-making dimension, of course, opens up more instability for the country, but it also offers the promise of a more democratic process, because more people or different things are included, right? But it will be, I think that there's concerns, however, to foster this deal-making that doesn't have sustainability. And what are the important issues in terms of, the composition of a new government? It's not only the leadership, but it's also, how much stability they're going to bring, what type of alternatives they're going to bring in terms of governance, and also in the context of making decisions, it will be the composition, right? So, for example, if Anwar's coalition, Juang and Barisan, comes in, the level of composition, ethnicity, and others also becomes important from a configuration of deals. This, unfortunately, is the reality in Malaysia. So the last part of the continuum is that you could have a National Operations Council similar to what you had in after the 1969 racial riots. And this would basically be a different type of leadership, would have a set period of time, most likely until the time of when elections would be held, which would be about 2 years, right? And it would probably have a kind of different mix of leadership. And I think, what we see is this kind of response from some of the parties in government now, Dr. Mizuki and PAS, there's been opposition to this discussion of an NOC, which has been presented as an alternative within that spectrum. And each of these different solutions offer different sets of dynamics for the kind of the quality of democracy in Malaysia, as well as the issues of stability. It's not clear any of them really offer better solutions to the crisis. And this is what's interesting about the conversations now, is that there aren't necessarily real meaningful discussions about what are the things to be done to solve the crisis that's going on in the country.
How likely do you think that at the end of these meetings, how likely do you think we will see a new government come out of it? Because most opposition leaders who met with the Agong yesterday seem to be keeping their cards very close to the chest. How do you read the situation?
Well, I think perhaps they don't have much to say. what we're dealing with is an opposition that is part of the problem of what's happening in the country. There's disunity among the parties. There's the leadership differences. There's been lots of discussions about alliance formation. I think that in a sense, the opposition is not presenting itself as a kind of sustainable alternative when they continue to bicker among themselves about issues of logo and others. But at the same time, I think that the opposition leaders do not want to be seen as you know, making the crisis worse. So I think it's consistently across the opposition. We saw them talk about what were the sets of issues of the people in this process, and focus on the crisis. I think there's a focus on wanting to try to take things step by step, which is to kind of end the emergency, open up parliament, and to move back to more democratic practices. And in the sense, I think the opposition played these cards very clearly, that they're wanting to open up the democratic processes in the context of Malaysia. But this is a real difficulty in that, there's concerns that this would kind of open up the situation for more instability. And Malaysia's caught because if it continues where it is, these are also creating sources of instability. No question. Right. Malaysia's, the government itself is leading to having actions and others that are very much hurting the country from the perspective of investment flows, the issues of COVID-19 and others. As long as the country has an emergency, this also sort of puts the brand that there's an instability. But then on the other spectrum, there is the idea of bringing people into parliament. And the question that people have is whether or not they can have confidence that these leaders can actually solve their sets of solutions and come together in a particular way. These are legitimate questions. Is it possible for the opposition to come together and there's a new government? Yes, but I think that the signs have not necessarily instilled confidence.
If the signs don't instill confidence that, you know, we could leave these meetings with the formation of a new government, it does seem to me that despite that, the parties that are in government seem to be a little worried. You mentioned Muhyiddin's principal private secretary, Marzuki Mohamad. He released a 9-minute video on Facebook making a case against the National Operations Council, which perhaps he's worried that that could be the end result of these meetings. And then you have past chief Abdul Hadi Awang, for example. He mentioned that he wants action taken against the plotters and that PN is a democratically elected government. He felt the need that he needed to, you know, restate that, to reinforce that, despite, you know, it already being more than a year after Langkah Sheraton.
I think that, so far in the decisions we've seen, most of these decisions have worked in the incumbent's favor. Muhyiddin Yassin's government has been given the benefit of the doubt. And I think that we have to recognize going forward the power of incumbency as opposed to without a clear alternative works in their favor. But the fact that they're speaking out is a recognition that there is the possibility of some actions taken on that continuum. And the NOC is being presented consistently as an alternative because it fits within the context of sort of the parameters which have been set, that it needs to have a certain composition, the government needs stability, there needs to be focused on crises. And the fact that they're expressing these worries openly is an indication that these things are very much on the table. The question is whether or not that option is going to be chosen. And I think, what we've learned in the study of Malaysian politics is when we have these kind of inter-elite dynamics evolve, there are often unexpected outcomes. Those outcomes, be it Sheraton move, be it the imposition of the emergency, they emerge from the interaction of processes that are taking place. I think what is happening now is that there's less discussion of alternatives openly from the perspective of the opposition, but there's the recognition on the part of the government that there are alternatives that are out there. And those alternatives are being presented and have gained traction.
I also want to talk to you about Parliament and what we can expect once it reconvenes. But we'll get to that after the break. I'm speaking with political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Dr. Bridget Welsh, who's a political analyst and an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. And she's helping me make sense of why so many prominent politicians are walking in and out of the YDPA's palace and what these meetings could mean for our political landscape. Now, Bridget, one possible outcome of this meeting is the fact that the king could pretty much just advise all the leaders, the party leaders, to say and say, okay, we probably need to reconvene parliament and reconvene parliament soon. There's already been discussions on the end of the government who say they are, looking at hybrid, a mixture of online and in-person parliament and things like that. So how likely is it that once parliament does reconvene, that the MPs come out all guns blazing? Do you think that start shooting at each other and this whole politicking starts again, the numbers game start again? Do you think parliament reconvening will cause the fall of the government?
Well, I think if parliament is reconvened, there will be clear parameters of what can happen in the outcomes in terms of votes and others. The issue that I think will be if the parliament opens is what happens with the next budget, which of course needs to have a vote. But I think what we've learned from the past is that the speaker is quite adept at making sure that that key votes are not necessarily against the government's favor. But I do think that, in order to open up parliament, there would have to be some sort of agreement about the parameters of where the discussion would move. But the reality is, once you have parliament open, the fact is that it opens up the opportunity for established practices. And I think that, you cannot take the deal making and the discussions about the interests of power away from some of the MPs. And I think that it is likely that there may be some pressure down the line, but it will depend on the parameters of the deal that are struck and the discussions that are made in terms of how things open up and to the degree that they open up.
What can we do to achieve some form of stability moving forward? I think the people want to know that, right? Because I guess the obvious answer is elections, which would be a hard reset. But COVID-19 rules out that possibility. I don't think people, the Malaysian public, wants an election right now. And that seems to be the consensus across the board as well. Regardless of parties, everyone seems comfortable with the idea, no elections until after the pandemic. The Sarawak state elections has also been postponed. So I guess the simplest way to achieve some form of stability is to not only cease fire, as they call it, but throw the guns away altogether and form a unity government. Many have put forth this idea of a unity government. What is your take on it?
Well, I think that the unity government would inherently, the way it was conceived, be a disunity government. but I think the question becomes of this NOC alternative, which is kind of a similar type of discussion. The two sides of it, right? One is that would it be operated within an environment where they're given time to work together, like an NOC arrangement, or will it be a government of different actors within the system trying to come together in order to provide alternatives? And the question within that is how many of those people in that new government would be people who are outside of the political apparatus in terms of technocrats, and whether or not people in that government were people in their personal capacity or in their capacity as part from the representing parties. And so I think it's not so simple to say one way or the other. It depends on the arrangement that comes together. And a critical dimension of that is who is leading that. And if there is a kind of, the unity government proposal came from Mahathir Mohamad. And if Mahathir is the one leading a unity government, you can guarantee that it will be a disunity government.
Right.
The question goes to composition. It goes to leadership in order to make the assessment. And I think that what would be very important from the perspective of leadership is somebody who can seem to be bringing things together, is not, doesn't have the baggage of the past. An alternative leader that is able to kind of bridge the different actors and players involved, and that there is inclusion across broad spectrum. This, of course, includes Sabah and Sarawak, but it also includes the different communities within Malaysia. And this is not an easy thing to do. And the question here is whether or not there's the leadership to try to push on these things. I think there's clearly interest, but whether or not that leadership and bridge building leadership is able to forge that. It is on the table as an alternative. And this is, if you look at that spectrum that I was laying out earlier, from the kind of, you know, keeping this current scenario in place to kind of an NOC government, the unity government would be part of the deal making that kind of the third area. And that would mean different agreements that are reached for people to work together to present itself as an alternative leadership. And that might include some of the people who are currently within the PN government. And keep in mind, people will move to the sides that they feel most, that is in power. Being in power gives you a lot of power. You know, the problem, however, with the unity government also is that, in a sense, the PN is illustrative of that, is you try to bring in so many different groups that they can't work together, and they can't and they don't necessarily have a kind of clear kind of programs and policy programs.
Right.
And if you ask the question earlier about what can bring stability to Malaysia, that is a different question. And the unity government is not necessarily what I put on the top of the list. I would point to two or three other factors that I think can help to bring stability to Malaysia. Number one is, I think they need to decentralize some of the decision-making, that it cannot be at the center at the top. Given that there's a crisis, you need to have different points of political engagement in terms of decision-making and others. And this decentralization to states and others could be an important element to kind of forge stability, because Malaysia has a very over-centralized system. And so as a consequence, when there are problems in the center at that system, then this just that creates instability for the country as a whole. So decentralization is very important. A second key thing is to invest resources in the institutions that are needed for the crisis. And this involves putting much more resources into the key priorities of dealing with what is associated with a crisis, such as the healthcare. You know, I cannot continue to question why there hasn't been more reallocation of personnel towards the vaccination program. In terms of implementing it in a way that works through the local networks, not only in state governments, but with other institutions. So institution building and focusing more cohesively around the kind of key priorities or policy priorities is necessary. And a critical element of that has to be more oversight of decisions that are being made, because many of the decisions are being made without consultation, and some of that needs be part of opening up parliament, but also it means, in particular, the committees in parliament who deal with oversight need to have to be re-empowered in order to assess what is happening.
What do you think of a confidence and supply agreement? You brought it up before the break, and for those who may not be familiar with the term, basically it's a loose gentleman's agreement of sorts between the government and the opposition, in which the opposition pretty much says, hey, I promise not to question your numbers or file a motion of no confidence, but you need to fulfill a certain number of criteria, for example, providing equal parliamentary allocation for all constituencies. What is your take on a confidence and supply agreement? Do you think this could be the most likely outcome?
Well, most likely outcome I see as, you know, more the different polls, the one and two that I mentioned earlier,
okay,
kind of pressure reducers and others. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And even if we're going to have a move, the deal making dimension is just potentially too unstable for many players. So therefore, that's why the NOC ends up being seen as more chances than a confidence and supply agreement, in the sense that it hasn't necessarily been articulated well as one of the sets of options from a perspective at the national level. And I continue to feel that things, despite the fact that the situation is so the crisis is so serious that the incumbent still weighs considerable influence. And the idea of kind of limited change is probably at more the advantage. But again, we're going to see how this plays out over the next week or so as discussion continues. But in terms of looking at a confidence and supply agreement, we see two states where this has happened. Of course, the most public discussion was in PEROC, where we have seen at the state level a considerable cooperation. It's not been easy, but so far the agreement seems to be holding. And I think we've also seen a similar measure that was taken in Johor. It wasn't described as a confidence supply bill, but it was a deal that was struck and that allowed opposition members to get their constituency disbursements and others. And this was constituency allocations. And this in itself also is holding. And so we see in two states that were not so stable that they have some stable agreements. But it is important to recognize who are the members of the confidence supply agreement, the composition of that. And I think at the critical dimension, both in PEROC and in Johor, it was UMNO that was very important in this equation. And I think if a confidence supply agreement is to work at the national level, I think UMNO has to be an important element within that discussion. And this will raise the issue for different actors of whether or not the public can accept different parties working together in a crisis. And of course, the parties together that are most apt to talk about putting things together are UMNO and Pakatan Harapan. So would it be possible to have a confidence supply agreement with PN? I think that given the criticism in the public and the polarizing politics in that sense, it's been a lot of criticism of the government. I think that the different players, both UMNO and Pakatan Harapan and other players as well, Bajwang and Warisan and GPS, I think that they may have a difficulty having a confidence supply agreement with PN because the ground of PN is actually, quite sour for many groups, especially their traditional supporters. So, you know, UMNO and Pakatan Harapan would have to go back to their supporters. And UMNO's already in the government. And of course, it's wanting to act like it's not in the government.
Yeah.
Making a new deal, I think, with PN is not that salient politically.
So I'm guessing there's absolutely no chance then of PN and UMNO coming out of this kissing and making up and, you know, being and putting up this front to that they are together, UMNO together with Muhyiddin's Perikatan Nasional Bersatu and PAS, UMNO Bersatu PAS completely on the same page. I'm guessing there's no chance of that happening.
In Malaysia, everything's possible, but I would say that this is highly unlikely. But I also think one has to, you know, look at what we see here is that the government, if the option four is chosen, which is to choose a kind of new government, you may see new actors who have not been in politics. You may see MPs being displaced completely and new deals coming out of that, new arrangements coming out of that. But I think, you know, to answer your question, I think it is very difficult to mend fences given the circumstances. Is it impossible? No. But is it unlikely? Yes. Yes. Because the performance of the current government, there have been some positive areas of the government's performance in terms of trying to procure vaccines, for example. Even if they have come late, I think if we compare Malaysia to other countries, Malaysia is still doing better than that. However, what's happening now is that it's not enough, and that we have a situation where the timing and the way that the implementation has been very weak.
All right. Final thoughts, Bridget. Should we expect any seismic shifts in our political landscape over the next few weeks, or has all of this, you know, been the performance aspect of politics, you know, theater, drama, while policymaking continues to take a backseat, people continue to die. What can you tell me about the way people have been reacting as well?
Well, you know, everyone looks at the leaders for their seismic changes, all right? So there's constant discussions. Will there be a change of government? Will there not be a change of government? I think that the seismic changes in politics are happening, but they're not happening at the top. They're happening in the society. We're seeing, you know, open discussions and critical discussions of institutions and actors in unprecedented ways, and on social media, in conversations, as people are really sort of not only expressing their discontent, but they're also a situation where they're presenting alternatives and policy discussions and giving ideas. Government is being forced to react and to make statements about to criticism on social media. There has been a more responsive dynamic, even if it's the one that is not necessarily satisfactory. So there is kind of the public has become the opposition to the government. And within that, we are seeing what I call a Malay awakening. And that is, you know, we've seen at different points of time of crisis in 1999 and 1998, back in 99, we saw the rise of the Reformasi movement. And this, of course, was responding to a crisis. I see in society new pressures among, particularly among Malay community, we're expressing their discontent about what is happening at the leadership level. And we're seeing new voices of young people mobilizing in different ways of thinking about politics. And we're not focused on the politics of the past, of the leaderships of UMNO or PKR or DAP. They're focused more on articulating different policy solutions to the problems, demanding more expectations for governance. And I think we see that this crisis, which I would argue is the worst crisis the country has ever faced, the crisis that they haven't been able to appease the population by offering them different adequate social safety net supports and financing in terms of stimulus. It's exposed the weaknesses in terms of implementation. We're seeing new forces coming up, and this is the seismic forces. There is a lot of rumbling in the society. And with that, it's also a different way of conceptualizing politics. In terms of engaging in politics, you're going outside of the parties. You're actually expressing views for themselves. And that going to be something that is going to be very difficult for the parties to grapple with, but it's also going to emerge for new political forces and a much stronger society as a result of this crisis.
Thank you so much, Bridget, for speaking with me.
Most welcome.
That was political commentator Dr. Bridget Welch helping me make sense of the recent one-on-one meetings held in the palace between the YDPA and some of the big wigs on the opposition bench. So if you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app or on bfm.my. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.